But there is an image that has been just as burned into my mind as well, gentlemen. And this is one that came on Saturday night at John Cain Arena. I was there calling the game on the collective. And as the game came to an end, we saw that horrific final play in a cavalcade of horrific plays from the Phoenix down the stretch. And the team walks off right in front of our commentary position. And I am drawn to the face of Mike Kelly. The man, if you could have seen this face, it would have told you the story. My colleague on the broadcast, Jamie Hamilton, described him in one word, and that was defeated. Although you could have said that about the entirety of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix as they walked past. But this was a man that just looked beaten, looked out of ideas, and just looked despondent because he knew what was coming. And sure enough, just before 9 a.m. Sunday morning, ESPN's Olga Nulich puts out the tweet, the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix have parted ways with head coach Mike Kelly. Sam McKinnon's into the role in an interim basis. The search is going to go worldwide. We heard from the Phoenix on Monday afternoon through Simon Mitchell. There's been a few names already thrown up. Quite interestingly, a couple of former Sydney Kings coaches have been thrown up in there as well. We might as well just rename them the Southeast Melbourne Kings if that happens. But Matt McQuaid, Saturday night, you said that you have some thoughts on the situation regarding the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. I've been waiting for this, and I know a lot of others have as well. I dare say those thoughts may have changed from Saturday night to now, but I do want you to give a little bit of, if it had things hadn't have changed, I'll start with a question and then let you break it down. But if Mike Kelly was still the coach right now, would you have come on this program today and said he needs to go tonight?
Yeah, because I knew that was, if he had lost, and I think I said this to you off air, that if the Brisbane game, if he'd lost that game, he was gone no matter what. His position would have been completely untenable. Had he stayed, I would have had more than a few thoughts about that. And look, I just want to start by saying that the one thing I have for Mike is enormous sympathy. I said that last week. You know, he is a great guy. I think anybody who's had anything to do with him over the journey, and I've had a little bit to do with him, you know, when he's been a coach or an assistant coach or even a player going way back, would all say the same thing, that this is a quality individual and a quality human being, right? So the first thing, I guess, when this type of thing happens, you always have to have sympathy for the individual. You have to have care for the individual. That's number one. Number two is it should have happened a lot sooner. And in point of fact, Mike should never have been put in this position in the first place. I think it was a case of great loyalty, which is a good thing, by Simon Mitchell and Tommy Greer to someone they respect immensely as a person. But I think when you looked at his overall record coming into this season, and with the one exception of that Coach of the Year season that he had with the Cairns Taipans, he's been a losing head coach throughout. And, you know, his final record, I think, finishes up something along the lines of 41 and 60 odd, whatever it is. Yeah, I mean, as a head coach. So, yeah, like 41 and 80 odd or whatever it ended up being. But with Southeast Melbourne, he finished at 10 and 23. So, yeah, I mean, I know there was the built-in excuse from the previous season about the injuries and, you know, giving him an opportunity to with a brand new roster with a lot of talent that they brought in. But the reality was, you know, and I've said this before as well, Mike as a player was outstanding, great, you know, teammate, great role player, defensive player, tough guy, hard-nosed, all of the above. As an assistant coach, he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant, you know, tremendously engaging with the players who all relied on him, you know, who he was a guy they could go to if they were, you know, maybe a little bit intimidated by a Dean Vickerman or whoever it might have been. He was so highly regarded in that way. But I've said it a million times, just because you're a great assistant coach doesn't mean you're going to make a great head coach. It's just some people in this life are not meant to be head coaches, at least at NBL level. It takes a special personality to do it, because you're dealing with, you know, a whole bunch of different personalities as a starting point. You know, you have to be this great man manager as an assistant. You know, you don't, the expectation's not on you really. You're kind of in the background. You're not front and center. You know, you're not a guy that has to stand up in front of the media and take questions. You're not a guy that has to suffer criticism, even when the team's losing. No one criticizes the assistants. Everyone goes straight to the head coach, which is unfair because it's a team thing, right? But it's, you know, it is the way of the world. So I just never thought Mike was really cut out for it, at least in again, at NBL level. I did say last week, maybe from a college perspective, because it's a different kind of dynamic and paradigm that you're looking at there. But he wasn't the right guy for the job, clearly. And, you know, you talked about Simon Mitchell and Tommy Greer, you know, having their press conference. And the fact that Simon more than once was saying, no, I believe in this roster. I believe in this roster. And, you know, that tells me that they essentially just didn't think anymore that Mike could get what they expected he should get from the roster. Now, there's plenty of arguments to be made about, you know, the playing group and how this whole thing has been put together. And I have said there's enormous talent on this team. But from Mike's perspective, yeah, he was never the guy to get that talent going. You know, bring in Nathan Sobey, and I think, you know, Nathan Sobey's got a bit to answer for, quite frankly. I don't think he's helped Mike out at all. He's not been good so far. Obviously, he got benched, which was against Brisbane, which, you know, I did say that they'd probably try and change things, and that would be one of the things. But, you know, one of seven from the field, it just didn't work. You know, Nathan against his old club. There's bigger problems than just Mike Kelly as well in that organization. And for me, when a coach is dismissed, particularly 5 games into a season, even though he's 0-5, they weren't going anywhere. They're looking at least, you know, bottom 2, bottom 3, if not the wooden spoon. To me, it's an organizational failure. It's across the board. I think Tommy Greer and, look, Simon Mitchell, friend of the program, has been on this program as well. Love the guy to death. And I know Tommy very well, and I've known him for several years, even commentated with him once or twice. But those are the two guys. Now, the pressure, to me, should be on them because, you know, they were the ones that gave Mike that team. They were also the ones that signed him, where most people were saying after a 10-18 season last in NBL 24 that they wouldn't have brought him back. So now you've got Sam McKinnon in there as an interim coach. Sammy, you know, look, again, he's in an untenable position in some respects. But then, you know, there might be a new coach bump in the throwdown, who knows. But what they've got to do is stop. They've got to be ultra serious about this coaching selection this time. It can't be a young guy. It can't be a guy that's been an assistant for a while, because this group, as it's constituted, needs a hard-nosed, you know, take no crap. You do it my way. I'm going to set the standards, and you better follow them. Otherwise, your ass is out the door. And that's the, you know, who am I talking about? You know, it, pretty obvious. There's one pretty obvious one that's out there, who established a culture at the Sydney Kings, you know, which ended up with 2 championships in his 2 seasons, and that's Chase Buford. He's the obvious one. If they're not talking to him, they'd be nuts. Will Weaver, similar. But not as probably hard-nosed as what Chase is, but still a guy that's all about setting standards. They can't go down that path again where they're just looking at a young guy or an assistant with no experience, or, you know, not that Mike didn't have experience, but he wasn't a winning head coach, I mean, during his time at the NBL. So, and as I said, I think the other thing is the players need to take accountability for what's happened. Because look, it just hasn't worked. They've made, I think Joe Wieskamp, they've got if you're going to make another change, that's the guy I get rid of straight away. I just don't think it works. I think they need someone who's more defensive-minded because, you know, this team as a group has really struggled, right, defensively and offensively for that matter. But defensively is where, you know, they really just struggled to stop anybody. So Wieskamp, yeah, he's a turnstile defensively. So is Matt Hurt. But at least Matt Hurt's giving him 20 a game. They've got very little up front. Jordy Hunter's being asked to do way too much. And we know that he's had his issues with fouling. So, you know, he hasn't been as effective, I think, because he's being asked to, you know, he's put in this position where he can't foul out. So maybe he's not as aggressive defensively as we saw with a, you know, a team like the Kings, where, you know, he could afford to use up three or four fouls because he had backup. So anyway, it's a really difficult thing. I hate that it's happened to such a good person in Mike Kelly. But bottom line for me, it's all about the organization now. That begins at the top. That's with Tommy Greer and Simon Mitchell. And for me, the pressure's on them to get this thing right the rest of the way.
Yeah. Well, Matt, I mean, you said a lot of things there that I agree with, which is quite often the case. We do think alike on a lot of these things. But
sorry, I did tend to go on, but I didn't.
No, you did, as you said, as you foreshadowed. And look, one angle on this, I think, has the league got a much lower tolerance for losing than what it once did? I mean, I think we're in an era now where we're continually in that sort of potential coach sacking merry-go-round these days. There's no appetite for building and working the way through a season and seeing if things will work out as there once was. We used to have teams where we said, yeah, that team's not going to win this year. That team's going to just flail around and maybe they're building for the future. We know they're going to be a losing team. They're a losing team. But these days, there's a lot more parity in the league, and we've seen, you know, the likes of Tassie build from the ashes to create such success, and teams like Illawarra turn things around and Cairns to be so competitive. And I think everyone thinks, well, we've got a shot at this. There's a pathway to the play-in tournament. So that also-ran mentality is not accepted these days. And I think when you couple that with the 24-hour news cycle that is prevalent in the world in general, but also the amount of NBL media, both NBL-produced and non-NBL-produced media that is out there these days, means that it's constantly in front of us. And anytime we have that 24-hour news cycle, we see it in politics and everything, people get bored of things very quickly and they need a change. And all the teams that are failing, all you need is, it can feel like 48 hours of saying, oh, is Mike Kelly going to be out of a job? That can feel like, oh, they've been talking about this for months. It needs to happen. You know, and there's such little appetite for that flailing around. And as in the past, we might have seen an article once a week and that was all. And so you kind of forget about it and let the team work on things. And so he's been put in a tough position, as you said. And the team, you know, was the team selected with the right personnel? Is it constructed for success? There's a lot of parts thrown together there. And does the blame need to be apportioned to another area, as you said? I wonder what the ownership group thinks. And that's the thing, you know, you've got Romy Chowdhury, but then you've got the likes of John Wall, Al Harrington, Josh Childress, Dante Exum, Zach Randolph. Mm. But this disparate ownership group, and I wonder what the ownership group thinks in all this. And is there that leadership coming through from that side of things? But certainly they would be looking with a fine microscope at Tommy Greer. And I think, you know, he's been a constant throughout this entire Phoenix process. And you have to question, you know, where's the success going to come from? They've had plenty of big name players. They've had the likes of Mitch Creek there for all that time. And you get guys like Big Al Harrington in and plenty of great players. And they're looking for that success to come. And as we say, that appetite is there and the appetite for losing is very short-winded. I think the Chase Buford one, it makes a lot of sense. You know, he's got four of his former players there. So otherwise you'd question it and say, well, Chase Buford has only really worked with one team in Australia and it was a very talented squad. So there's still plenty of question marks about whether he could make it work. So because he doesn't have that history across multiple clubs and he's only done it for a couple of years. But given that he's got four of his former players there, that could make some sense. Defense is certainly needed. You don't see teams win on offense alone, and that's a big failing in the way this team has been constructed, as you said. There just aren't enough defensive-minded players there. Nathan Sobey has copped a lot, but and it's been mentioned many times, But the way he plays is a particular style, and it's yet to be proven that it's a winning style. You know, the way he falls to the ground as he makes a play, and then the team goes down the other end 5-on-4, and he's passionate. You know, sometimes that involves really having a go at the refs or whatever it may be. But he, that passion, which I think is well intentioned, I think it may distract him sometimes too. So, and we can't put it all on him. There's a lot of players on the court there who are all contributing to what has occurred. And I think, as you say, more changes need to be made. I would look at that import change. They definitely need to bring some defensive nuts and bolts in, and whether they change rotations for that as well, because at the moment it's not a cohesive unit. And we've seen in the Boomers, in all different levels, that you need all the different parts together. You don't just chuck a bunch of offensive players on the court and hope to win that way. And a lot of questions need to be asked.
I'll give you a bird's eye account of what I saw, not just on Saturday, but also in the throwdown as well. But particularly Saturday, it was startling. And I'll start with this, because I'll just give an abbreviated version of what I said Sunday on the collective. You take away the human element first when you discuss these matters, because nobody wants to see anyone lose their job, especially, you know, Mike Kelly, much loved figure in the league. We're all feeling for him at the moment. But you actually mentioned that just a mention ago, Mookie, about is the tolerance for losing lower now in the NBL? Because I actually expected, leaving the building on Saturday night, that they were going to kick this can down the road perhaps and wait for Sunday and get blown out by United by 20 points, and then there's your jumping off period. Or the other discussion was, give him 4 weeks till we get to the FIBA window. It's not like he's getting turfed after a 20-point loss. They lost by a bucket, and that was still enough for them to go, nah, you're out, you're gone. See, it doesn't matter. So in that respect, I actually applaud the Phoenix for being ruthless in that aspect, because at 0-5, your season's already out of control. Like, they're already going to be trying to buck history in the 40-minute era. No teams come from 0-4 to make the playoffs. The Phoenix are 0-5, and they've got Melbourne United on Sunday. Good luck. But they were ruthless in making that decision. So that tells the sponsors, it tells the players, it tells the fans, we're not settling for this. We're not settling for mediocrity. So that's the first point. The second point is, like you said as well, Matt McQuaid, the pressure now gets turned up on the front office. Tommy Greer and Simon Mitchell, It's now their mess. They've got to clean this up. And I actually did refer to this a little bit at the start of the season, but now it really does hone in on them. I have every confidence they will get it done, because I think the two very experienced operators who know what they're doing and will bring them out of this, but it's their mess now. They've got to clean this up, so it'll be interesting to see what paths they take. And the third one is, I don't know where the team that took Melbourne United to double overtime in a preseason game has gone, but they weren't present on Saturday night. They were woeful. Aside from Matt Hurt, who has been the shining light out of this utter train wreck. I mean, Derek Walton Jr. at times seemed like he was lost and frustrated.
Yep.
Angus Glover has been left to sit on the bench, and he looks like he's lost all confidence and is now living out last season again. I don't know why Ben Ayre isn't being used at all. I have no idea how he can't get on the court for any game time. He was a DNP coach's decision. So too was Tom Vodanovic. In a situation like that, get a bit of experience out there on the floor. I love Owen Foxwell, but they're giving him burn ahead of Ben Ayre, and you got Tom Vodanovic not playing games. Well, in Tom Vodanovic's case and Angus Glover, why did you bring them to the club if you're not going to put them out there on the court? And then you come to Nathan Sobey. There was two plays down in the fourth quarter that I thought really summed it up. The first one was he drove to the left corner and chucked up an off-balance three that tickled the underside of the net. It was nowhere near it. Next possession, he tries a cut to the from the 45 to the bucket, loses his balance, loses possession. Brisbane go up by 6. Ultimately, the game-winning play. And then, talk about guys who are frustrated and out of sorts. Remember, Matt, Game 3, 2020 Grand Final, Casper Ware chucks up a shot for 3 and hits the side of the backboard That was the first thing I thought of when Derek Walton Jr. hit the side of the backboard. Thought, this is not the guy we've seen in Sydney, and I want to know why.
Yeah. Yeah, that was that after timeout play was yeah, it was desperation, and it came to nothing because, you know, and that was probably the ultimate death knell for Mike, because that just showed that, you know, he was just bereft in terms of, you know, calling the right play, making the adjustment. Yeah, he got the ball in the hands of the right guy, but then if that play consisted of just give it to Derek and hope he creates something against what Brad Rosen calls the muscle, which he did, he got swarmed and everybody else was kind of standing around watching. So, yeah, that was the thing for me, I guess, watching that game from afar, is just the lack of spirit in that club, you know, and the lack of confidence. And, you know, as Brisbane sort of worked their way into it after being down early, you could see it was kind of, oh, here we go again. And it's the sign of a beaten down team. And clearly, Mike, you know, he was on borrowed time. I think everyone knows that. There's no doubt about that. And yes, he had to go. I mean, my argument, and it's been made by a couple of other people in the NBL space, is that it never should have come to this. That's my argument about it. It should have been, look, Mike, you know, we need to go in a different direction. You know, we think we're going to build a team that we think is going to challenge for a championship, but you know, we need to get whatever it is, a certain type of character, or, you know, someone who's got a winning record, or, you know, whatever you might use as a rationale for it. But it's just unfortunate it came to this. And what's really frightening, you know, from the Phoenix standpoint, you know, Simon Mitchell, look, and he said the right things at the press conference in terms of, you know, we believe we've got the guys when, you know, to win. Okay, that's fine. But the issue they've got, and he's also saying that the NBL season, their season's still alive. I don't share his optimism, because if you look at what's ahead, and I've been having a look at, you know, after the throwdown on Sunday coming up, you know, it's you go to New Zealand on the road. Now, who knows what New Zealand team you're going to get, but again, it's a road game. If they're not going to make any changes from an import perspective, you're going with the same people, which I think is fraught with danger. Then you've got Illawarra at home. Illawarra is the hottest team in the league, and, you know, we'll get onto them in a minute. That's no easy step. Then you've got Tasmania on the road in that incredible environment. And you then follow that up. That's on a Friday. Then you follow that up with Perth at home. That's just round seven. So what's that? 3-4 games.
Where's the win?
They could be 0-9 quite easily.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if they were. You know, I think if you're going to make a coaching change at this point in the season when you're 0-5, it does smack a little bit of desperation. I agree with what Mookie said. I think it is a more sort of, it's a hard line in terms of reality about not letting coaches, you know, build the program. It's all about instant gratification, right? So it's a win now league. There's no doubt about that. That's what it's morphed into. But I just, you know, the way this whole thing's been handled so far, it's this season and the off season. And as I said, on paper, I had very high hopes for this team, but it just hasn't come through. And you know, look, they're gonna have to be competitive against Melbourne, like super competitive. What Melbourne did to Adelaide should have scared the living hell out of that organisation, the Phoenix, because they won't come within 30 points of that team the way they're playing at the moment.
Who's the clear leader on the Phoenix in the playing group? Like, yeah, is there one at the moment?
Who would know?
And you've got guys with the potential for that. Obviously, Derek Walton is one, and yep. You know, Jordan Hunter even plays that sort of role in groups as well. But you know, you've got a couple of new imports there. There's so many question marks, and obviously, Nathan Sabe lost all his mojo and his, you know, his social status, and it's a peripheral question to that. Do you guys think it was the right call to bring him off the bench against Brisbane?
It's something that our good friend Derek Rucker brought up, and he thought, you know, on the NBL podcast with Jack Everin, he felt it was a mistake. And, you know, in talking to him and you know, listening to what he had to say, I'm kind of coming around to his thing, because I mentioned that as something, if they wanted to make changes, serious changes, that would be the one I made.
That was the one to make, right? But was this the time to do it?
The timing is the exactly right, Mookie. So it's a great question. I'm probably on board with Ruck's thought on it, because, you know, it wasn't it sort of took away that motivation, clearly, because Nathan's a different person. You know, he's a different character, different type of character, and he has to be managed a different way. Again, in much the same way as the Russell Westbrook has to. I mean, it's sure he hears it all the time, but it's true. Yeah. That's who he is. It's he's got so many of the same characteristics. You know, wildly talented, athletic, great in transition, explosive, all that, and yet prone to the most head-scratching decision-making you've ever seen. And
polarizing.
The ultimate, and I know you don't like this person, but Bill Simmons, the irrational confidence guy, that's who he is. That's who he's always been.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And the Russell Westbrook one is a perfect analogy that you make. And I think knowing that about him and knowing that all the build-up there's been and all the smackdowns that have been on Nathan Sobey in recent times, and you think, well, all the history with Brisbane and what went on in the off-season, you think that would have been the one to just see, could he have a good crack of that? Because if he failed in that, then you say, okay, well, he's definitely got to be benched in preparation for the throwdown. But, you know, they didn't take things that way. They didn't at least have it go out shooting with that. So I guess we'll never know.
One last thing about the Phoenix is give me more Matt Hurt, because I love what he's been doing so far. In a team that hasn't been winning or hasn't been coming close to winning, he was sensational. 24 points, 10 of 15 from the field, got 6 rebounds, a couple of steals as well, and an assist. Just also on the rebounding count, if you're going to give up the nightmare account of 21 offensive rebounds and you get 25 defensive rebounds for yourself, trouble.